Cigars in Cinema.
Will you bring in the cigars, please?
The movie review podcast that tackles the smoky side of cinema.
Cigar, Mike!
Each week, we review a movie that contains, in some way, shape, or form, someone smoking a cigar.
Cigars.
Fire is good.
We'll talk about who smoked it, where they smoked it, how they smoked it, and we'll probably make fun of them if they have no idea what they're doing.
What are you doing?
You never light a cigar that way.
So sit back, light up, and enjoy the podcast that has it all. Cigars.
Cigar. Smoke it.
Smoke it.
Movies.
Say hello to my little friend.
And General Mayhem.
My doggie.
Wah! Hey, everybody. It's Brandon Luna.
Randy Rankin.
And special guest, Philip Fullman from This May Hurt. Say hi, Phil.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
I guess I should have said hi.
You should have said hi, Phil.
I know. That was the actual
setup. You totally
missed
it. You
put it right on the tee, and you shanked it.
I know.
So this is our.
Now you know what Joe's got to put up with. Every...
I believe it, yeah. So this is our Christmas episode. Now, I hope you're not offended by that.
No, not at all. You guys, you know, enjoy Christmas. I hope you do. I hope you have a Merry Christmas.
Phil would be offended because he's black, so.
Yes.
Only half.
He's the bottom half. He's a non-Gentile.
Yes. You're part of the tribe, as you put it.
We already had our eight crazy nights. So.
Oh, okay.
No, it's nothing that offends me. It's not my holiday, but I certainly have friends that I want them to have a Merry Christmas, just like they wish me Happy Hanukkah.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So no offense at all.
Right.
So today we are doing the Christmas movie.
Yep.
And what movie is that, Randy?
We're doing The Great It's a Wonderful Life. A top five movie for me, period, overall. It's a great movie.
It is awesome. And here's the trailer.
Well, it's against the law to commit suicide around here.
Yeah, it's against the law where I come from, too.
Where do you come from?
Heaven.
What did you say just a minute ago? Why do you want to save me?
Is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter. I'm leaving right now. I'm going to school. This is my last chance.
But they'll vote with Potter otherwise.
You can't laugh off this Bailey Park anymore.
Bailey family's been a boil on my neck long enough.
You realize what this means? It means bankruptcy and scandal and prison. That's what it means.
I'm worth more dead than alive.
Why don't you go to the riffraff you love so much and ask them?
I suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
All right. You've got your wish. You've never been born. You've been given a great gift, George. The chance to see what the world would be like without you.
I want to live again. Please, God, let me live again.
It's a wonderful life.
They don't say that at the end of the trailer. I just said
no.
Did you say that was a remix?
Or that was like a 2014 trailer for it that someone did, I guess.
Wow. Yeah, okay. I was going to say because it totally comes across as much more dramatic.
Yeah,
it does.
But
this
it's a
Christmas,
pretty...
Jimmy Stewart and Frank Capra bring you. Yeah, that's what
it's
I was expecting.
It's pretty dark, though. I mean, you got to admit
is.
The movie is the subject matter. He's going to commit suicide.
It
you
is.
Know?
Yeah.
So let's do a quick recap of the plot for those that haven't seen this movie, and I can't believe that anybody hadn't seen this movie.
Right.
You usually do the recap, so give it up.
Okay, we start with a fellow named George Bailey who is very adventurous. I mean, he's very goal-oriented. He has his life mapped out. He wants to be an engineer. He wants to travel the world. His dad runs a little small building and loan business. Tries to support the family to keep them from, you know, tries to support the city to keep them from Mr. Potter, the evil scum lord of the city.
The capitalist in the
movie. Yeah, the capitalist. And everything works against George. He's such a good-hearted man that he always sacrifices his goals for the people around him. And it builds and builds. He gets married, has kids. Life's not really working out for him, but he's a good-natured guy. Finally, scandal happens, not his fault. He decides that he should die. So he decides to kill himself, and his guardian angel comes down to show him what life would be like if he'd never been born. And that's basically it in a nutshell without giving away too many spoilers.
Mm-hmm. Not that we need to worry about spoilers on a movie that's a million years old, but still,
yeah.
Well, you know, there's still some people who may not have seen it before NBC bought the copyright to it. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, in the 80s, it was like 5-6 times a week.
Yeah, anybody could show it. Now it's just once a year NBC.
Yeah, it was the Night of Living Dead of the Christmas movies. It was just available to everybody.
And that's when people got tired of it. People got tired of that movie, and that's where it's got a negative stigma now because of what happened in the 80s.
So I was thinking about this. Let me toss this out to both of you.
Okay.
Is It's a Wonderful Life a Christmas movie in the same way Die Hard is a Christmas movie?
Is it
a movie that takes place during Christmas?
I think it really is about the Christmas spirit, though.
It has the Christmas spirit, but like you're saying, the Christmas part doesn't happen until the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's more about his life and his family's life leading up to it. But I think because it happens during Christmas and the Christmas spirit and the spirit of giving, I think makes it a Christmas movie.
I think no other Christmas movie really conveys that ideal. Than more than this movie does. I mean, you know, the ideal for Christmas is you're giving more than you're receiving. It's better to give.
Yeah.
And the guy lives his life as a giver. I mean, that's the whole reason that he's in the predicament that he's in is because he's given basically all opportunity that he had to be what he wanted to be away because he wanted to make sure that everybody else around him was happy, secure, you know, living their lives the way they needed to be. And that's really the crux of the whole thing, is that because he did that, he's in the situation that he's in.
You know, he basically let his brother live the life he wanted to
live. Exactly. His brother went off to war.
His brother,
his
he also sacrificed. Lived his, you know, saved his life and then lost hearing in an ear. So, I mean, this was the type of person he was from an early age, always sacrificing to the point of what's left for me.
Which goes to the point of, if it was Mr. Potter that was trying to commit suicide at the beginning of the movie, would his angel have shown up and been like, let me show you what... No, his angel would have been like, yeah, go ahead, man.
Be like, nobody's going
to
miss you, Potter.
Then I don't have to see you up there. You go to the other place, and we're good.
And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call this a time travel movie by any means, but it does kind of have elements of certain parts of a time travel movie.
Mm.
And in those kind of movies, you have to get so many things right. You have to make sure you cover all your tracks. And for this movie to come out in, 47, 49, whatever it was, they covered all their tracks. I mean, there's no stone unturned in the story, you know, from life without George to life with George. I mean, they really covered all the bases, and I really love that about that movie.
Everybody whose life he touched.
Yeah.
Is represented in the other version of the story where he's not there,
Yeah.
I've always said I think that's one of those things that everybody secretly wishes they had.
Yeah,
or wishes they could have. Because I think of how maybe it's not healthy because maybe you're the type of person who's a Mr. Potter. But if you're not, to be able to see, hey, you know what I'm doing on a daily basis or, you know, on a yearly basis, it matters to somebody. And that I'm impacting somebody. That's got to, that would give you a good feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Make it easier to wake up in the morning.
For sure.
Well, as Clarence said, and Clarence is the guardian angel, for those who don't know, as he said in that trailer, he says, I've given you a great gift. You know, it is a great gift. That would be interesting to see.
I'd like to see that.
Sure,
didn't
seem like it for most of the movie when he was just having the worst day.
Yeah.
Well, no one knew him. He was, just, you know.
Well, and that was the thing. It was always that George will do it.
Yeah, exactly.
We know he's there to support us. And Randy, when you and I talked earlier this week, you made a very good point that I had not picked up on, which was, it's obvious that George knows now how he's impacted lives. But at the end of the movie, all these other people are kind of like, wow, we really do owe George if we didn't have this guy. Mm-hmm. And they finally realize how important he is.
So wound up working both ways.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
He's the heart of that town, really. You know, and that's
the town would be gone.
Yeah.
And we talked about this on a previous episode, how much Back to the Future 2 is modeled after It's a Wonderful Life in a lot of ways.
True.
And it's, you know, the same thing. Town's now a bunch of gambling and, you know, it's bad times and all this stuff is happening. It's kind of weird how they, you know, I don't know if that was intentional or if that was just the way it was, you know, put together or what, but.
I don't know. I think, you know, maybe it's just one of those kind of universal themes in story writing.
Yeah.
Could be.
You know, the impact that one individual could have.
Yeah.
And that movie's so ingrained in so many people, too. You could subconsciously have written and patterned it that way. Absolutely. You know, I think so.
Without doubt.
Yeah.
So would you say this is your favorite Christmas movie?
Yeah. I mean, growing up, it wasn't. Respected it more as I grew up, as I got older. As a kid, Miracle on 34th Street was my favorite one.
Really?
Yeah.
That was the one where, wasn't that like a Macy's commercial? Basically.
Yeah, it's one where Santa Claus is really Santa Claus, and you got to prove
now,
that he's
not. Now, the original one's great. The one that Richard Attenborough was horrible. I thought that one was terrible.
I don't think I've seen that one. The original Natalie Wood was a little kid, right?
Yeah, she was adorable. Yeah. Absolutely adorable. You could tell then she was going to be a
big star.
Yeah, you could tell she had star power all over her.
So they were, you know what? That would be a rabbit trail, so forget it.
And it's the great.
It has to do with the Cary Grant movie.
And the great Maureen O'Hara was in it, and who just recently passed.
So. Yeah, yeah.
But back to, we haven't mentioned the cast of It's a Wonderful Life, of course. It's got the great Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart!
Yeah.
Everybody's got one of those.
I'm not going to try that.
He met Jimmy Stewart.
I have met
what?
Jimmy. I met Jimmy Stewart. I'll tell that later in the episode. But yes.
Okay.
The very pretty Donna Reed. I thought Donna Reed was gorgeous in this movie.
Yeah, she is.
She was very pretty.
Lionel Barrymore of the legendary Barrymore dynasty.
Yep.
Alfalfa. The guy who played Alfalfa. Remember him? He was in there.
He was the guy who opened the pool.
Pool, that's right. Yeah. I'm missing some bigger stars. But,
Thomas Mitchell was Uncle Billy.
You're right.
Henry Travers was Clarence. Mrs. Bailey was Bula Bondi. I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah. Ward Bond was Bert.
I forgot about Ernie and Bert.
Yeah.
That came from this,
Yep. So, yeah, it's just a great cast. Everybody does really well in the movie. There's not, you know, this is one of those movies where there's not a standout bad performance. Everybody does what they're supposed to do.
Oh, and what's his name? Sheldon Leonard.
Who created every TV.
He was the bartender, the mean bartender at the.
That's right, he was.
That was Sheldon Leonard, who created every
TV
show of the 70s.
I can't do a Sheldon Leonard. In my head, I can hear Sheldon Leonard, but I can't do his voice. But, yeah.
We sell beer and whiskey. Or something like that, whatever. Yeah. That's about it. You know?
And then he showed up on a lot of the sitcoms, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Be like every 70s sitcom I think Sheldon Leonard created.
That's true.
Yeah. Out of all the Christmas movies that are out there, this is really the only one that gets to me.
Yeah,
you know, it's the one that
gets you in the feels.
I can't not see the end of that movie without tearing up a little bit. Like but it always happens.
I'm going to try today. I'm going to see it later this evening. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. It'll get me every time.
Yeah.
Is there a favorite scene from the movie?
No.
Yeah.
You got a favorite scene?
When his brother, at the end, when everyone's giving him all the money, and his brother flies in through the snowstorm, and he says to my brother George, the richest man in town.
Yeah. That is a good line.
Yeah.
I think the phone scene, for me, is when he finally realizes that he loves her, and he's like just shaking her like, God,
he's
you
pissed
just...
Off.
He's so pissed, but he loved... I mean, that scene just...
Yeah.
Man, that scene gets me. Yeah. So well acted. The guy just has such chops. And
I like the scene when they're walking home and she's in the robe.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden...
Risque for back then.
It really was. Yeah. You know, here's a naked Donna Reed in a shrubbery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another shrubbery.
And then all of a sudden he's got to go because something's happened.
Yeah.
You know, and then here's the rope. And it turns on a dime. It does.
It's this nice romantic night.
And then all of a sudden, which is really kind of his life.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you're going away to college. No, you're not. Hey, you might make out with this girl. No, you're not.
Hey, you're going on a honeymoon.
No, you're not.
But that scene's also great, too, that she takes him to the house. They bought the house. It's a crap house. There's people out there singing outside. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that she thought enough of that house.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Well, and she's the one who offered up the money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When they ran out, and she said, "We have it here,"
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't even question her.
Mm-mm. No.
Because I'm thinking, I'd be like, "Whoa, babe, that's our honeymoon money. No, we don't touch that."
Right.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, "Okay."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which shows how supportive she was.
Oh, exactly. Grandma Walton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's like,
I don't remember the number, but she's like, "Can I have $2.50 or whatever?" And he's like, "Yeah."
Well, and you said what? That was
46.
46. So, yeah. I mean, that was still
that's 25.
That was still fresh in people's mind, the Depression.
Yeah, absolutely.
No,
because the war had just ended,
mm-hmm.
and they just come out of the Depression, so they knew what it was like to have a bank run.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And, it resonated.
And of course, Potter decides to capitalize on it, and I'll give you 50 cents on the dollar or whatever it was.
Yeah, he's a charitable guy.
Yeah, great guy. Mm-hmm. Now that scene, and it goes back to Jimmy Stewart's acting when Potter decides the only way I can beat this guy is to get him on my side.
Mm-hmm.
So offers him $25,000 a year, which
was a lot of money back then. Yeah.
You know, and a box of cigars, and he almost falls for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally he's like, darn it. He's mad at himself. So like, I can't believe I almost fell for this.
There's another we talked about alternate endings, and there's actually, I went on there looking for the Saturday Night Live alternate ending, because if you haven't seen it, it's hilarious, and we'll play the clip here in a minute, but there's so many of them out there that people just kind of cut their own endings.
Uh-huh.
And there's one where they're like, they show the scene where he gets offered the money, and then they show him running upstairs. He's like, yay, Christmas is saved. he's like, Bailey has a new job.
it was the cigars that put it over. Yeah.
Like, wow, that'd be horrible if that was the actual ending. But that'd be the modern day ending. It's like, hell yeah.
Yeah, it would. You know? Well, he'd do that. And then Donna Reed would quit talking to him.
Yeah.
And she would she'd make some slight comments, and the kids would be happy for a little while, and then he'd become angrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would, until he realizes his mistake, and then it would be a lesson of it's never too late to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask a question. And that we just bragged about how great, or I just bragged about how great this movie, you know, covers its bases and everything. Mm-hmm. Would Donna Reed have really been an old maid?
No.
Wouldn't,
no.
What's his name? Sam, the
guy that kept trying to go after
him? Wouldn't he?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. That's the only part that doesn't ring true to me in that movie, is that Donna Reed would become an old mate. Except for the fact that she did love George. She'd always loved George, so maybe that would have been, she never would have fallen in love. I don't know.
Yeah, but somebody would have. It wasn't like she was unlikable.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah.
She was definitely agreeable. And easy on the eyes. So, she would have been
scooped up. They did a good job of toning her down and trying to make her look as frumpy as possible.
Yeah, they did. But, that's the only thing in the movie that doesn't really ring true to me, is the Donna Reed becoming the old maid.
Yeah, maybe more with an abusive husband. Well, it's something where it's like, okay, she's not going to stay single, but she's not going to end up with a good guy.
Yeah,
right.
Something
certainly
like that.
Certainly not a guy of George's character.
Maybe a guy...
She would have
gotten... fell in love. He died in the war.
There you go.
And then she ended up alone and heartbroken.
And she married Bender's dad from a Breakfast Club. Shut up. Shut up, bitch. Go make me turkey pot pie.
Nice.
A little crossover action there.
I like that.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was cool.
Except you can't say bitch in the 40s. I don't know.
No,
you really
wasn't allowed.
How about that scene when he friggin' saves that guy from poisoning that kid? That was pretty intense. And then that's when he gets... Something happens because of that.
That's when he smacks his ear and it starts bleeding.
Yeah,
he loses his hearing saving his brother.
Yeah.
But the old man goes off because he was drunk and starts hitting him.
Yeah. We saw this movie as a family. And, you know, my 16-year-old loves it. She absolutely loves it. But the 7-year-old freaked out at that scene. She's like, she's getting all scared and, like, kind of covering her eyes. I'm like, wow.
Basically, it's a guy beating a kid.
Yeah.
A drunk beating a kid. And the kid's trying to, like, but I did the right thing.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he realizes, like, I'm so sorry. Like, you know what? You're still an ass and a drunk.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not forgiving you right now.
That's the thing. There was a lot of forgiveness in this movie. And I'm thinking, I'd probably be holding me some more grudges.
Right.
Just the cut of my jib. But.
Yeah. Well, you're not George Banks, you know? So.
No, I'm not.
Or Bailey.
George Banks.
Mr. Banks.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. George Bailey.
Yeah.
Much better name.
Yeah.
You know, it fits. It's a good... solid.
And you'll probably get to it in trivia, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But know what the snow was in this movie, right?
Oh yeah, there's a thing about that, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
So let's play this clip right real quick here from Saturday Night Live. This was probably one of the best things I'd ever seen. I thought it was hilarious.
I remember it.
And this is back when Saturday Night Live was kind of hit and miss, you know, they were okay. They still had a good cast. They had Dana Carvey.
Well,
and,
that was when I started watching it, so I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman's in here.
Mike Myers and those guys.
So this is the ending, the alternate lost ending, as introduced by William Shatner.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight marks an historic, not to say unique, moment in the history of both television and cinema. After a search of nearly 40 years, the fabled lost ending to Frank Capra's 1947 film, It's a Wonderful Life, has been found. Tonight, for the first time anywhere, Saturday Night Live is proud to present this priceless footage, the fully realized vision of an authentic American genius. So without further ado, here is the lost ending of It's a Wonderful Life.
They didn't ask any questions. All they said was, if George Bailey needs help, we're here to help him.
Oh, well, Mary, I never realized I had so many friends. And Clausel Friend is a rich man. That's what Clarence said. My golly, he was right.
We wouldn't have a roof over our head if it wasn't for you, George. Well,
thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Pardon me.
Oh, Harry!
Hello, George. How are you?
Welcome home, Harry.
Merry Christmas, George. Now, wait a minute, everybody. I've got a telegram here I want to read. From London. Dear George, stop. Mr. Gower cables you need cash. Stop. My office instructed to advance you up to $8,000. Stop. Hee-haw and Merry Christmas, Sam Wainwright!
With the money, the $8,000.
Well, that's great, Uncle Billy. Well, what'd you do with it?
I was in the bank. I had it in a newspaper. I remember giving it to someone.
Well, who'd you give it to?
No, wait. Now, I just called Clarence at the bank. He told me that old man Potter deposited exactly $8,000 right after I left. It was him!
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go get it.
Here we go!
Enough trouble already.
You made one mistake, Mr. Potter. You double-crossed me and you left me alive.
Now, wait just a second. I'll give you the money back.
I don't want the money. I want a piece of you, Potter. Why? Well, I'd rather, Mr. Potter, than the whole vast configuration of things. You're nothing but a scurvy little spider. Why, you're nothing but a fraud. You're not even a cripple.
Now, wait a second. I can explain that.
Harry, Mary, hold him for you.
Yeah, it's him, George.
Wow, that's great. That's the best Dana Carvey Jimmy Stewart I've heard, because I've seen him do stand-up, and it's not that great.
Yeah.
But that was great there. That was awesome.
Yeah, he's more of a sketch guy.
Yeah,
I think so. definitely.
And he always, you know what, his impersonations are always over the top.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's not that rich, little, subtle.
He goes over the top.
Goes over the top so you can get across.
Yeah. But you got to admit, some of his over-the-top stuff is pretty darn funny.
Oh, yeah, His George Bush, his church lady.
Ross Perot was
shopper,
great.
Shopper, can I finish?
Ross Perot was
just out there,
I used
man.
To could nail that. Matter of fact, I called my grandmother the night before the elections, because I knew she was voting for
Perot.
Clinton.
Oh, okay.
And so I called and pretended to be Perot.
Yeah.
And I was doing Dana Carvey doing Perot.
Yeah, that was George Bush impersonation.
And she bought it.
Really?
She called the whole family after I hung up. Ross Perot just called me.
That's awesome.
I think that's another one that everybody thought they had a Ross Perot. Mine, I don't think mine was ever that good. And I don't know if it was Dana Carvey or who did it, but the line was, and I won't do my Perot, but the line was, what we're going to do is take this guy, shave his ball sack, and dip him in a bucket of witch hazel. And that was like Perot's get tough on crime thing. It was like, wow.
Crazy.
So you got to think, imagine that in the Perot voice.
That's sad. That's just sad.
Wow. So yeah, one of the best little snippets there from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, absolutely.
That one cracks me up.
Absolutely.
And it's so like spot on too. It's black and white. Everything looks the way it's supposed to look. The sets are right. It's very well done.
Yeah, the guy that did Mr. Potter. I couldn't see it.
It was John Lovitz.
Was it John Lovitz? Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. He finally succeeded in a sketch.
Yeah.
He
was good.
He was more of a character guy too.
Yeah. I liked him in certain stuff. I thought he was funny.
I don't know what his name
the
was.
The wedding singer was good. He was good.
Whatever the liar was.
That's Morgan, the ticket.
Yeah, yeah, Morgan Fairchild, whom I've seen naked. And then the get to know me guy. I don't remember that. And then he did the acting brilliant thing.
Yeah. Okay. He had moments.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. He wouldn't fit into It's a Wonderful Life, though.
No.
There was something, because I think the whole movie hinged around the fact that Jimmy Stewart was believable and likable.
Yes, exactly.
And then, oddly, last night I ended up reading a lot on Jimmy Stewart because I was watching Charade with Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn.
One of my favorite movies.
And they called it, you know, the best Hitchcock movie Hitchcock didn't do, but they talked about Stewart was considered for it. It went to Cary Grant. And then Stewart was supposed to do North by Northwest, but because Vertigo was a flop, which I
don't understand.
I don't get that.
We've talked about that.
Hitchcock was like, "No, never going to use you again." So he went with Cary Grant.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, in the trivia here, which I'll get to, that's something that's mentioned as well. So let's go ahead and do the trivia.
All right.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
That's the fact, Jack.
That's a fact, Jack! No horseshit, Jack. No horseshit.
IMDb trivia. One of the things they did mention is that Cary Grant was actually picked for this role, and that he turned it down and it was rewritten for Jimmy Stewart.
Nice.
Go figure.
Wow.
Boy, did their careers cross paths so many different times.
Lot, This is pretty interesting. I think this is kind of funny. You know, get this. For the scene that required Donna Reed to throw a rock into the window of the Granville house, Frank Capra hired a marksman to get it on cue because he didn't want to have to shoot a whole bunch of times. They did give her a chance to do it, and on one take, Donna Reed broke the window with true aim and heft without the assistance of the marksman. Apparently, Reed had played baseball in high school and had a strong throwing arm.
Nice. There you go, Donna.
Yeah.
Now I like her even more.
I know, right? That chick can throw. The gym floor that opens up to reveal a swimming pool was actually located in Beverly Hills High School in Los Angeles, so entitled little shits over there had a... swimming pool under their gym floor. That's awesome. As Uncle Billy drunkenly leaves the Bailey house, a sound of him stumbling into trash cans on the sidewalk is heard. In fact, a crew member dropped a large tray of props right outside the door when he went off screen. In reaction, Jimmy Stewart began laughing, and Mitchell quickly improvised, "I'm all right. I'm okay." Director Frank Capra liked it so much, they used it in the final cut, gave an extra $10 to the guy who dropped the stuff because they made it a better scene.
Nice.
So that's cool. The scene that George Bailey prays in the bar, Jimmy Stewart began to get so overcome that he began to sob right then and there.
Wow.
Frank Capra reframed the shot and actually zoomed in on it because he wanted the close-up to show the emotion in the shot. That's why that particular shot appears grainy on film, and that was the first take. So,
wow.
Jimmy Stewart was nervous about the phone scene kiss because it was the first on-screen kiss since his return to Hollywood after the war. Under Frank Capra's watchful eye, Stewart filmed the scene in only one unrehearsed take, and it worked so well that part of the embrace was cut out because it was too passionate to pass the censors.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah, they could... I think it came up in Notorious when Cary Grant's kissing Ingrid Bergman, and you could only lock lips for a certain amount of time, so they got around it, or Hitchcock got around it, by having them move their head, kind of go to the neck and stuff like that. But they timed how long you were allowed to kiss that was considered suitable.
Wow. Both Frank Capra and Jimmy Stewart have said that this is their favorite film of all time that they made. That's cool. Two of the writers called the finished film horrid and refused to see it when it was released. Only one, Clifford Odets, only one of his ideas appears in the finished film, and that's the idea of George preventing Mr. Gower from poisoning the boy with the wrong vitamin pills. So the writers didn't like it.
And
in fact, this film was a flop when it was released
in
1946.
I knew that.
Jimmy Stewart cited George Bailey as being his favorite character. The part was originally developed for Cary Grant, and it was rewritten for Stewart, so that's cool. Frank Capra estimated the film would be shot in 90 days, and he was right. And as a there was a bet on the crew going that it was going to be done in 90 days, and he threw a big party to celebrate because he was right. So that's cool. Previously, cornflakes dipped in paint had been used for snow in films up until this point. Frank Capra didn't want to do that because the dialogue would have to be revoiced and redone. So they developed basically a new form of snow that was called fomite, which was something that firefighters used. It was a chemical that was basically soap and water mixture that was pumped and sprayed out. They actually got a development theatrical technical award from the Motion Picture Academy and Arts for developing this new form of snow for films. Cool. And it was used ever since. So that's cool. Lionel Barrymore convinced Jimmy Stewart to take the role of George, despite his feelings that he was not up to it so soon after World War II. Wow.
Wow.
That's cool. Despite being set around Christmas, it was filmed during a heat wave, and it got so hot that Frank Capra gave everyone a day off to recuperate. Wow. Frank Capra filmed a number of sequences that were later cut, including the final scene that was spoofed by Saturday Night Live. No, I'm just kidding. That's not true. but there's rare stills that have been unearthed. A number of the alternate scenes included an alternate ending. George Capra's first script had George falling to his knees and saying the Lord's Prayer, which was cut, feeling it was too overly religious. And then there was also a scene of George rescuing a kitten or something that was cut. So
that would have been a little too precious.
Yeah. In a scene in which the pool opens beneath the gym floor, the actor who pressed the button, his uncredited role of Freddie Othello, was Carl Alfalfa Switzer. Yeah, so from Little Rascals. Uncredited.
Really?
Yeah. First and last time, Frank Capra produced, financed, and directed and co-wrote one of his films. Originally ended with Ode to Joy, not Auld Lang Syne. So there's a lot more, but most of it's pretty much repetitive. So pretty
Very
good stuff,
cool.
though.
Huh. Very cool.
Yeah, I think Auld Lang Syne works a lot better.
I do, too.
Than Ode to Joy does. Mm-hmm.
Even though nobody knows what the hell Auld Lang Syne means, it's still a much better song for that moment.
Yeah. Well, and the Lord's Prayer would have seemed a little...
Again, overly religious.
Well, I'm not thinking overly religious. I'm just thinking the time it takes him to say it and just, everything stops.
Yeah.
It just would have hurt the flow.
Yeah, it would have.
This is kind of interesting, too. There's a couple more here. 42 rings are heard through the course of the film, so if Clarence is right... 42 angels got their wings throughout the course of the film. The year that Potter offers George $20,000 annual salary is unclear, but assuming that the scene takes place in 39, the equivalent amount in 2015 dollars would have been $337, and that's a lot of money.
$337,000.
Yeah. $337,000.
Yeah.
Sorry, not $337.
Yeah. Well,
that's a lot.
Deflation, boy.
That's
a lot.
Basically $300,000 and a box of cigars.
Yeah.
To
what a
take
deal.
A job.
Huh. Where he gets to travel.
Well, all of a sudden, that becomes a lot harder to say no to.
Exactly.
Because what could you do with all that money? What kind of good could you do with that money?
Exactly. He could have taken the money and then done a lot of good for the city.
He could have.
Yeah.
But who would have run the Bailey Building alone?
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Donna Reed's first starring role.
Was it really?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Well, yeah, because this was...
This is definitely before the Donna Reed show.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of where it plays in with From Here to Eternity, but she was supporting actress in that. I think she won the Academy Award for that one.
Might have. I think she did win something. I don't remember what movie it was.
So the lady that played Jimmy Stewart's mom in this movie, Belua Bondi, played his mother 5 times in other films.
I thought so.
Smith Goes to Washington, of Human Hearts, The Vivacious Lady, and The Identity Crisis. Wow.
Huh.
I've not heard of any of those except for Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
must have been early when he was a studio player or something.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what is... if you had to pick, let's say, second favorite Christmas movie for you guys, what would it be?
I couldn't. I can't even think of one.
Yeah, Christmas.
No,
Vacation,
whatever comes. You know what? Okay, I always end up confessing so much stuff on podcast.
Yeah.
Not my favorite vacation movie.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's by far my favorite.
Yeah. No, yeah. I still go with the original, but. God, I'm trying to think of a Christmas movie now.
Like
it's not Die Hard. I really...
I'm trying to help you out. I'm drawing blanks. But
I mean...
Christmas Carol or anything like that?
Scrooged?
Oh, then the Muppet one. No, the Muppet one I like. I just remember that scene, light the candle, not the rat.
Light the candle, not the rat.
For whatever reason, that gets me every time.
Scrooged with Bill Murray?
You know what? Yes. Yeah. I did like that, which I thought, hey, there's kind of a good take on it.
Yeah.
Which it gets, again, I think maybe the original Christmas Carol can get a little precious at times, but I would like to see Patrick Stewart's one-man version of that, because I hear that is phenomenal.
Yeah,
I can imagine. Well, I've mentioned before, there was a fellow tribesman of yours, Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
Played, it was called An American Christmas Carol.
Okay.
And he played, it was a made-for-TV movie. And this is right at the height of the Fonz. And he begged for this role.
Wow.
And he got it. And it's awesome. It's my favorite take on the Christmas Carol story.
Just more a kind of update. And
It's Depression era. It's 30s. Yeah, Depression era.
And not as
but
zany
he
as
he is Fonzie in it, so it's kind of weird. But
he says, hey,
Bah Humbug, hey, you're going to have to work, hey, yeah.
Right.
That one I like a lot, and Miracle on 34th Street I like.
I don't think I've seen Miracle on 34th Street. I'm familiar with it. But
so we've discussed Die Hard several times. Let's get it out there.
You know, I don't think of it as a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
It takes place at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they work in the songs, but...
Now I have a machine gun to ho,
yeah.
ho, ho.
So the most interesting thing I find about that movie is the scene where Alan Rickman is falling and the look on his face.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The way they filmed that,
mm-hmm.
they told him, we're going to cut you on the count of three.
Mm-hmm.
They cut him on one.
Yep.
So he was really surprised. And so they're like, yeah, we're going to
It was like a 15, 30-foot fall or something, too.
Yeah,
it was a good size.
It wasn't stuntman worthy, but still for an actor kind of
especially when you're not expecting it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, crap.
Yeah.
Well, I saw something on Facebook yesterday, and I don't think of it as a Christmas movie either. And I have a confession, I'm not even that crazy about the movie. It's okay. I like it, but it's not great to me.
Blasphemy, sir.
But anyway, this thing, it's the picture of Rickman falling. And it says there are those who think Die Hard is a Christmas movie and those who were wrong.
Yeah.
Or think it's not a Christmas movie.
And those that are wrong. Yeah. That's right. Lethal Weapon could also be considered if you want to go that route. I mean,
that's true.
The first Lethal Weapon takes place during Christmas, and
yeah, that's
they even have a similar thing where it's like nobody here but us bad guys. And they put the little sign on the tree for Gary Busey.
Hey, what about wasn't Home Alone kind of a Christmas movie?
Yeah, consider that a Christmas movie.
Left him or something.
Yeah. Have you? Did you see the thing?
I was going to say somebody posted something. I haven't watched
it. It's pretty darn epic. Is it
him going back in character? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's basically he's like an Uber driver, and he's picking this guy up, and the guy gets in the car, and he's like, oh, he's like cussing up a storm, just fucking this and fucking that, and, you know, I don't even know how to drive a car, and the guy's like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm doing this for my girlfriend, you know, and he's like, I don't know if I want you to drive me. He's like, you want to drive? He's like, you're going to let me drive? He's like, yeah, drive. So the guy's driving, and in the meantime, he's like, oh, so you ready for the holidays? He's like, oh, man, fuck Christmas. You know what happened? When I was 8 years old, eight-year-old boy, my parents left town and took the freaking asshole brother with them and left me at the house. And I had to defend the house against all these guys trying to break in. You know, these guys weren't even real criminals. They never even cussed. They were just like, he goes off on this tangent. It's hilarious.
That's nice to see he's getting work.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs work.
Yeah, he's probably banked enough.
I think he banked enough.
Everything else.
Yeah, he's got a... That's such a bad. I'm not going to say.
Wasn't he with Mila Kunis for a long time?
Yeah, he was, actually.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say he's got Michael Jackson money. He probably doesn't need to.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Not wrong.
Not wrong.
Not incorrect.
Right.
No, that's. Which says something horrible about your parents. First, they pimp you out to be an actor. Then they're like, hey, well, yeah, why don't you go spend the night at Mike's house?
Yeah.
Thanks,
leave your debit card.
Yeah, exactly.
Is he one of those guys that emancipated from his parents or whatever?
I don't know.
He might have, but I know his parents bilked him out of a ton of money.
Yeah,
I know there's a need for child actors because they're in films. But at the end of the day, I kind of think all parents who kind of pimp out their kids like that, there's a little bit of something.
There's
wrong.
Something wrong in it. There's definitely wrong.
Yeah, for sure. Like, for sure.
Okay.
Because how few of them were well adjusted by the time they become adults?
Oh yeah,
none.
It's. Yeah, well, you had that glut of child actors from the 80s. You had, like, the entire cast of Different Strokes Danny Bonaducci and...
Yeah, Mackenzie Phillips and...
Yeah.
Dana Plato turned out great.
but
she did porn. So.
Yeah, well, it wasn't, like, porn, I don't think. It was, like, Skinamax porn.
Oh.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
If I remember, she had a facelift at that time, so it was hard to tell it was Dana Plato.
Yeah.
Never really thought she was all that cute.
No, she really wasn't. Nah. But
well, who are the few that actually turned out okay? Can you think of any that are... Alyssa Milano.
Dana McKellar from The Wonder Years.
Yeah, okay. She turned out okay. Alyssa Milano turned out okay.
Yeah.
I think she had a stretch of bad, but I think...
Fred Savage.
Yeah.
So here's my theory on child actors. If you look at Macaulay Culkin now, if you start out as a child actor and you're cute, when you grow up, you will be ugly.
Mm-hmm.
If you start out as a goofy child actor, you will grow up to look a lot better.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's exceptions to that rule, but for the most part, yeah.
Who's the exception?
Let's
I guess
see.
Dana McKellar.
Yeah, Dana McKellar's one. What's Topanga from Boy Meets World.
She's
a cutie, you know.
Would you call Michael J. Fox a kid actor? He was a teenager when...
I don't know, but he wasn't doing it when he was a little.
Yeah.
Not like a lot of these guys, but... and gals.
Wasn't there something just a few years ago that they were going to do, not a remake, but like a sequel to It's a Wonderful Life, and everybody just went ballistic?
I remember hearing something. I don't remember details. I couldn't tell you too much about it.
I can't imagine how that would just go well.
Yeah. There are several movies I think you don't need to remake. Casablanca is one of them. This is another one.
Yes. Cool Hand Luke. They talked about that a few years ago, too.
Ooh,
yeah.
That would be...
And Casablanca, actually, there was a TV remake. Which,
with David Soul from Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, if you look around, you can find it. But
I think of him as the guy who sang Don't Give Up on Us, Baby.
There you go.
And then technically, Barbed Wire, if you look at the script and the storyline of Barbed Wire with Pamela Anderson, it is Casablanca.
Wow.
I haven't seen it. Yeah. Don't know. So I couldn't
tell. I'm out on that one. Neither.
I haven't seen it either, but I did read a thing about it. There's a pretty good little thing on YouTube about it you should watch that shows you all the points that are like right on. I'm like, wow.
Okay. Now that it's the...
Yeah, but Rick's a stripper.
I think a lot of that stuff, most of the Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant films just shouldn't be remade.
No.
I don't think you should remake a lot of John Wayne films.
Well, It's a Wonderful Life's been remade several times.
By who?
Marlo Thomas did a TV version. It's a Wonderful Life, but it was the same movie. It was like Life is Wonderful or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Because my mom was a huge Marlo Thomas fan for some reason. She loved That Girl.
By the way, That Girl's now on Hulu if you're interested.
Is it? Yeah. I can't, because I swear to God, if I showed you my mom's high school picture, she looked just like Marlo Thomas.
I used to like Marlo Thomas as a kid.
Hey, that's my mom.
I'm sorry. Your mom married Phil Donahue.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, a weird coupling. I would just not.
Yeah, that's one of those ones.
Not picture
of.
At all.
I did think it was cute when she played Rachel's mom on Friends. I thought that was a good casting there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had forgotten about that.
So what are some Jimmy Stewart movies you like that are some of your favorites?
Vertigo.
Yeah.
I really like Vertigo. So I don't get it was a bomb. Yeah. I don't see how that happened. Rear Window.
Yeah,
that's my favorite.
But my favorite, and this actually displaced, as I started thinking about my list of top movies, and I was thinking in your head, what's my favorite movie? Philadelphia Story.
Oh, that's love awesome.
It bumped Citizen Kane to number two, but you've got him and Cary Grant.
Yeah.
And
Katharine Hepburn.
The thing was, he wasn't playing that Jimmy Stewart type role. He was a little bit more of a rogue, more of the cad, but he did it so well.
And that's his only Academy Award. Was for that
well
movie.
Deserved, yeah.
That drunk scene when he goes over to Cary Grant's. It's one of the funniest scenes.
Cheek and extra hair. Yes, that was
the remake you're talking about. It was in 77. It's called It Happened One Christmas, and Marlo Thomas plays Mary Bailey.
Yeah.
Who else was in it?
Yeah. Orson Welles was Potter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wayne Rogers was George Hatch.
Oh, jeez.
Cloris Leachman was Clara Oddbody. Uncle Willie was Barney Martin.
Oh, yeah, I know who he is.
Yep. Yeah, just a crazy cast. Dick O'Neill, Mr. Gower. Doris Roberts was Ma Bailey.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's got a 6.0 on IMDb, surprisingly. Christopher Guest was Harry Bailey.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Huh. Wow.
Interesting.
Who knew?
Yeah.
I kind of have to find this movie now.
I knew, because my mom watched it all the time. But, yeah, what's it called again?
It Happened One Christmas. Yeah.
That's right.
Good casting of Orson Welles.
Yeah, no kidding.
But sadly, also goes to show that later in his life, he took anything.
Oh, yeah right.
I mean, he advertised for Ernest and Julio Gallo.
Yep.
He will sell no wine before it's time.
And what was that tower game? That wizard or something? It was like this tower, and he had to climb up this.
Yeah, he did the voice.
And he did the commercials for that, and he did the voice on it.
You know what his last role was?
No.
Moonlighting.
Really?
He did an intro to the black and white episode of Moonlighting.
Wow.
Oh,
that was it?
Wow.
Yeah, and he said, so, what was the line? Kids, get your mom and dad, tie them up, put them in the closet, and enjoy this episode.
Funny.
It was something along those lines.
Wow.
There's a guy who peaked very early.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
I have immense respect for him because he changed radio, and then the next year he changes filmmaking, and you're 24.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, peaked early, but just phenomenal talent.
Yeah, Citizen Kane's one of my all-time favorites. My wife hates that movie. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't understand. It's like, this is a fantastic film.
Haven't seen it.
I've never heard Citizen Kane.
I've heard so many people say it's not worth it, so I just
no. Here's the thing that people don't take.
And
into
I know
account.
What Rosebud is, so it's like
well, and that does take away. But to watch it from a cinematic standpoint, this is the film that gave us some of the shots that are now commonplace. Mm. First of all, this is the first one that was told with multiple narrators, unreliable narrators.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The shots where they used. The way they use perspective, mm-hmm. instead of now that I'm talking or up front, and if you're behind me, you're now blurred because mm-hmm. the focus is on me. They set the focus up so you see the entire cast, so you're able to get their reaction mm-hmm. to what the person is saying. And none of this had been done. Now it's like, well, it just looks like a regular movie.
Yeah.
But none of this had been.
I'm sure in that regard, it's probably awesome. Yeah,
it is. And it's even knowing the ending, it's still just great to watch the performances.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful movie. I mean, just beautifully shot. Everything about it. Lighting, everything is great. Yeah.
A man and his ego. Well, and you know what? It has probably one of the best montages ever.
Really?
It's he and his wife are sitting having breakfast and how it ages them.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it does, they're having one continual conversation, but they continue to age. So Orson says the line, and he's in his 40s. She answers, she's in her 50s. He retorts, he's in his 60s. So it's one conversation, mm-hmm. but they continue to age through it.
Okay. Yeah.
It's neat.
So,
yeah.
You should definitely check it out one day, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, you like old movies. I guess classic movies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are some old ones that aren't that
great.
Yeah,
I guess, yeah.
So what did you say, Knox, Citizen Kane at number 2? Vertigo?
Philadelphia Story.
Philadelphia Story.
Because I've watched it. I just realized anytime it's on, I'll watch it. And I've also got It Happened One Night with Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert.
Yeah, great.
In my top films. There's one scene in there where they're at the travel lodge or whatever it is, and the detective comes in looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they act like the married couple.
Mm-hmm.
I lose it every time. It is just the funniest thing. They just go into this bit, and she's like, "You promised me you'd quit drinking." I'm like, "God, there we go.
Yeah. I like a lot of Jimmy Stewart's westerns, too. I mean, a lot of people.
Oh, great. Man from Laramie, Winchester 73.
Man Who Shot awesome. Liberty Valance.
Yeah. That's definitely one of my favorite westerns.
Yeah.
Yep. Good stuff, man.
He did, and I remember him a lot. He did those cheesy poems on The Tonight Show.
Yeah, he did.
Wow.
Yeah,
he would show up and
I had forgotten about that until you just mentioned it. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to hear my Jimmy Stewart story? My cousin and I were driving to Seattle for a job. He had a friend that owned a deli in Seattle. We were going to go run it. And my cousin has always been a starstruck kind of guy, autograph seeker. I mean, he'd find phone numbers for stars and call them on their phone, get them to send him autographs. So we're driving through Hollywood to get to Seattle, and we buy a map of the stars' homes. And I knew Pat Boone's daughter, so I met her. I met him.
Debbie?
I knew Debbie. So I met Pat. That went so well that he's like, "Let's go to Jimmy Stewart's house." I'm like, "I'm not going to Jimmy Stewart's house. That dude's a national treasure. We're going to get killed." You know? So we go, and I'm sitting in the car, and Jimmy didn't have a gate or anything. So he just walks right up to his front door, knocks on the door, and the door opens, and it closes. And this is my vantage point from the car. Door opens again, it closes. So I'm like, "Well, I'm going to get in trouble whether I'm sitting in the car or up there on the front porch. I might as well go up the front porch." He hasn't been kicked off the porch yet. So I get up there. My cousin says, "He's eating lunch. We're probably not going to get to meet him." About the time the door opens, is there a problem here? And we're like, no, not a problem. Stood on the front porch for about 15 minutes and talked to him. "Where are you from?" "Dallas." I said, "You used to do commercials for the Fort Worth Zoo. I remember that when I was a kid." "Oh, yeah, I'm a big supporter of the Fort Worth Zoo." It was great. And nicest guy. Cool thing was for other people was the vans that people pay to take him around to the stars' homes. They got to drive by and see Jimmy Stewart in the front porch waving to him, and they wouldn't have been able to do that had it not been for us.
Who are those guys with Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, very cool. Just he was exactly like you would think he would be. Exactly.
Wow.
Great guy.
That's pretty nifty.
That's awesome, yeah.
That was cool.
I was looking because I had forgotten. I was like, I know I've seen a lot of Jimmy Stewart movies that I like other than It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered it because it was on TCM the other night, and I recorded it. The Shop Around the Corner.
Great show. Great movie.
Which was what You've Got Mail was based on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then...
Bell Book and Candle.
That, yes, I have that on DVD.
And that's kind of Bewitched that kind of started Bewitched.
Glorious Kim Novak.
Yes.
Also, the lady who plays her aunt in that
mm-hmm.
was the Bride of Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. And then Call Northside 777.
Mm-hmm.
And he did Rope with Jimmy
Stewart. Yeah, love Rope. Yeah.
Which was great. And then...
Anatomy of a Murder is a
yes.
great movie.
Harvey.
Yes, great.
Spirit of St. Louis.
Great.
And then the one the Glenn Miller story, which I really liked.
That's great. He's great in that.
But The Shootist.
Yes.
He was John Wayne's doctor in that. Yeah. So mm-hmm. they did another movie together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone knew that was going to be John Wayne's last movie.
Yeah.
So everyone took pay cuts and such to get
in. So one thing I had read, interestingly, the guy who played the most interesting man in the world,
mm-hmm.
who's like Russian Jewish mm-hmm. or something like that. He's not really Latin,
mm-hmm.
but he was in that movie and got shot by John Wayne.
Really?
He got shot in the head. And he said at the end of the day, he had a welt because they had to keep reshooting the scene.
Mm-hmm.
So he kept getting shot. Apparently they used like paintballs
mm-hmm.
and wow. he got shot between the eyes so much that he had a giant welt between his eyes. And the whole time I'm thinking, wait a minute, you trusted a guy to shoot you right there?
In the eyes. Wow.
Like,
wow.
Wouldn't you worry that you're going to get hit in the eye? But they had to shoot the take like 7 times. But yeah, John Wayne kills the most interesting man in the world.
Wow.
I don't always die, but when I do, it's from John Wayne. Well, yeah.
Well, Hugh O'Brien said he was always proud that he was the last person John Wayne ever killed in a film.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's cool stuff.
Who else was it? Lauren Bacall, right?
Lauren Bacall, Ron Howard.
Little Richie Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, Little Opie
Cunningham.
Who's
the black guy? Scatman Crothers?
Yeah, Scatman Crothers.
Yeah. You got The Shining.
Oh, and what's his name from Have Gun Will Travel? Richard Boone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who was about to die, and you could tell, too. He lost a ton of weight. He looked horrible in that movie.
Mm.
When did Jimmy... I'm trying to think of what... Well, it said on here he did like an episode of North and South. And that was like one of his last...
That little miniseries or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, about the Civil War.
Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze, yeah.
Some other guy.
I don't think I ever saw that. Did you ever see that?
Get about Patrick Swayze?
You don't like Patrick Swayze?
I don't get him.
The Chippendale scene is hilarious in Saturday Night Live. That's great.
But everybody kind of revered him, and I'm like... Hey,
yeah, I never... Like, Point Break, everyone thinks it's this great classic movie. It's enjoyable.
I watched it and cringed.
Yeah?
I hated Roadhouse.
I love Roadhouse. That's a guilty pleasure for me.
See, and I can't get through it without doing
but
the
But you know what I love about Roadhouse?
Mystery Science Theater thing.
I love Sam.
Sam Elliott?
Sam Elliott.
And Sam Elliott just...
Yeah. And Elvis's bodyguard, Red West.
Yep.
The guy with the...
Red, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, see, and I remember in Roadhouse it was... Kevin Tye from Emergency who played Roy DeSoto. And it was like, boy, he's really gone the route of playing the bad guy because he was the bad guy in, The Last Boy Scout, also a Christmas movie.
I almost mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
It's that
another
same
Bruce
writer,
Willis.
Shane Black.
Satan Falls.
Yeah, that's right.
He writes a lot of Christmas stuff.
And
Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang is another one that takes
place
during Christmas.
That's true, and I like that one.
Yeah, that's a great
play. A great role for Val Kilmer. And so that gave me hope for Iron Man 3 because I'm like, ooh, Robert Downey, Shane Black. I'm like, maybe you shouldn't write comic book movies, too.
Right.
It was just horrible.
See, I think Last Boy Scout's more fun than Die Hard to myself. Personally, I like it better.
I like them both, but yeah, it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
I do like it.
It's definitely more on the funny side. There's a lot more humor in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Hit me again, I kill you. Yeah, that's it. It is.
I seem to drop my cigarette. Can I have another?
I had forgotten about that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is one of my favorites.
That's a good one. Yeah,
just because the dialogue is so snappy.
It is very
that's
good.
That's a good movie.
We're very definitely off topic.
We are. Well,
let's mention real quick the cigar scenes in the movie.
Are there cigar scenes? Well, Potter offers him a box.
He offers him a box of cigars.
A box of cigars.
Nice
smoke
one.
Is that?
Yep.
Well, does Potter smokes in the movie?
Oh, what's the?
He does. Yeah.
What's the guy's name who was Potter's advisor? He's the most prolific character actor of all time. Something Lane.
You got me.
And
got
as of a couple of years ago, he was still alive. He was I think he was in his hundreds.
Really?
In his hundreds?
And he's the most prolific character actor of all time. You'd see him in a billion things.
What was the guy's name?
Something Lane.
Let's see here. Do you guys have music to fill while we're looking at IMDb on our phones?
We get in trouble with that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Man, it's less than 30 seconds.
Yeah. Wow, it doesn't even
list him.
Charles Lane.
Charles
Lane.
Yeah.
I know that dude.
Well, about how many movies is he been in? Charles Lane.
Charles Lane. Here's an here. Yeah, check it out.
But what's the actor's name? Oh, okay, it is Charles Lane. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in everything. Let's see. In 365 films. The last one was 95.
When did he die? Because he was still alive a few years ago.
Died in 2007 at the age of 102.
Okay. 102.
Wow. Ooh, this looks dramatic. What was this? Ooh, he did a movie called Acting on Impulse.
The last movie he did was The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes. Was a TV remake in 1995.
Yeah, because that's a movie you definitely want to remake.
He's an episode of L.A. Law. He was in War and Remembrance.
The new Leave It to Beaver.
Ooh,
what?
St. Elsewhere.
Yeah.
Hunter.
Wow. Oh, Hunter. That was a Dirty
Stephanie
Harry
Kramer.
TV.
She was so hot.
Yeah. Oh, who? Stephanie Kramer?
Yes.
Yeah.
She was smoking hot.
I also like the car. What does that say? I like it.
Murphy's Romance?
Yes, he was in Murphy's Romance.
The Return of the Beverly Hillbillies.
Wow. The Strange Invaders. That was a fun one.
Lou Grant.
He's one of those guys you've seen.
Morgan Mindy.
Soap. He was 7 episodes in Soap as a judge.
Chico and the Man. Wow. He wasn't on Chico and the Man.
Right.
Scatman Crothers was.
Yeah.
The Rookies.
Yeah, he remember that show. A lot of single episodes of television.
Yeah.
Like The Odd Couple, all kinds of stuff.
He was just a character actor, but you've seen him in
The Odd Couple, also now available on Hulu.
Yeah, Bewitched.
Nanny and the Professor.
This episode sponsored by Hulu.
There you go. See, I remember Nanny and the Professor because it had the guy who played Jared from The Big Valley. Mm. Jared, what was his name? Richard Long. And he was the least interesting of the Barkley brothers.
Okay.
My personal favorite was Nick.
Yeah.
You know, he was kind of the tough one, you know, and then there was Heath. But it was like Jared, he's like, no, he's the attorney. And then they had the younger brother who like the brother on Happy Days.
Yeah.
It's like
disappeared.
The one that disappeared.
You never to be heard from
his name?
Again.
Skip or something
like that.
Oh, geez.
Plenty of Happy Days Christmas episodes.
Yes, there were. There was a thing on Facebook about characters that disappeared from TV shows. And if you remember The Cosby Show, there was an older sister the first season, too. And they never addressed her again.
I really like how they did
it. There are so many places to go with that one.
I know. Yeah, I know.
Thank you for that setup.
I tried not to. Try to keep it PG-13 at least here. Although you said Fox, so I guess we're
That. Yeah. I love how they dealt with the whole sibling disappearing thing on Boy Meets World. Did you ever see that?
Uh-uh.
So they had the young sister that just kind of vanished from the show for like a couple of seasons. And then she like walks downstairs in an episode like 3 seasons later and she's like, I've been upstairs a long time.
They did that. Mike's wife loved that show Reba, which wasn't a bad show. It wasn't great. One of the middle daughter in real life got anorexia and was off the show for like 3 years because she almost died from it. And then she shows up and she just walks through the house and the kid goes, where have you been? She goes, I went to get something to eat. I thought that was a funny
show. Oh, wow. On Mad About You, that first season, Paul Reiser's buddy was named Selby.
Yeah.
And he was the guy always coming over to the house. Second season, they bring in his cousin Ira.
Yeah.
And then in later seasons, they're talking about their friends or something. And like, Selby. And then Paul Reiser goes, yeah, whatever happened to that guy? Just like, never to be heard from again.
I like it when they call back. Yeah. And reach back around.
Kind of they get meta, I guess that's the term the kids use. Well, you know what? The most meta episode I ever saw was the last episode of Newhart.
That's genius. That was super genius.
I was watching that. I was working at a radio station. And I actually snuck in a TV. I got to see how this ends. And I could not stop laughing. I'm like, that is just brilliant.
Yeah.
And the lucky bastard still married to Suzanne Pochette.
Right, right.
Well, oddly enough, later married Tom Poston.
Right.
In real life?
Yeah.
Did she? Wow.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry Van Dyke was on Carson one night.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he's real good friends with Bob Newhart. And Bob Newhart said, I've got a perfect part for you. And he says, oh, yeah? He goes, yeah, I'm playing a guy that owns this inn, and I want you to be the handyman. Which he'd have been great for the part.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, great. He goes, yeah, just come by to audition tomorrow. And he goes, oh, I don't audition. I can't. I'm terrible at auditions. Newhart's, you've got the part. It's just for, you know, semantics. You know, just come audition. It's not a big deal. So he says, okay. And he bombed the audition. Wow. And Newhart came up to him and says, yeah, we're going to give you a call.
Yeah, we're going to give you a call.
Man, the button-down mind of Bob Newhart. You know what I find so interesting is he and Don Rickles are best friends.
Yeah.
It's like you could not find two more opposite guys.
Right. Can you imagine hanging out with those guys, the conversations
they
must have?
I would pay money. I would give money to a charity if I could spend a day with Rickles.
Yeah.
They're one of the best episodes of Comedians in Cars with Coffee. Is Seinfeld and Rickles going out. It was just
which was a great show. If you haven't ever seen it, it's
awesome.
I'm
a big fan of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was great on Get Smart. He and Don Adams had a great chemistry. He played like his old war buddy or something, and they were hilarious together too.
Rickles is another one of those actors that you forget that he actually did some movies and his TV series never really did anything.
I would love to be in a Don Rickles show and have him make fun of me.
Oh, everybody wants that.
I want him to rip me.
Awesome. That's one of those. So if you go to see Gallagher, first of all, why? But
he saw not Gallagher.
I did. I have a story about that. Yeah.
So you don't want to be in the front row at a Gallagher concert because you don't want to get hit. But with Rickles, it's like, I want to be in the front. Make fun of me.
Yeah.
Make fun of me. Say something.
Yeah. Call me a hockey puck, please.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No. So the story of the not Gallagher thing, I was traveling, this is a long time ago, and I'm at this shitty hotel, and it has a bar attached to it and everything, and I go down there to get a drink, and the guy's like, he puts a poster out, and I'm like, oh, Gallagher's going to be here. And he's like, look a little closer. I look at it, and it's like the small little letters, not Gallagher. I'm like, what the hell? That guy looks just like Gallagher. He's like, yeah, it's his brother. I'm like, are you shitting me? He's like, no, his brother tours. It's a big thing. He does all these little small venues and, basically does Gallagher's show. I'm like, really? How does Gallagher feel about that? I think he's getting sued.
Was there really that much demand, like in the small markets, right. Going, God, if we could only get Gallagher here.
Right. Or even some form of Gallagher.
Right.
We would be great.
It's like a tribute band. It's like, does anybody really want to go see a Gallagher impersonator?
Yeah, that's what it was. And he was actually, did the show spot. Sounded just like him. Looked just like him.
Jeez.
Didn't do watermelons. Did cantaloupes because you can't do watermelons. I'm just kidding. He did watermelons.
Unbelievable.
Gallagher and Carrot Top are the two most worthless comedians to me.
I don't get Carrot Top. I don't understand.
I'm not a big prop comedian guy.
No.
I'm not either. I like the humor. Well, and I think that's why Philadelphia Story is one of my number ones because of the type of humor, because it's verbal. It's not visual.
Yes.
And there's many times where upon the fourth or 16th viewing, you hear something, you're like, wait, how did they get away with that?
Because
it was almost this little aside, and it works out really well. And you're like, oh, that was a little risque, but it was very clever.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I love about Casablanca. Is it's such a great movie in so many levels, and there's a lot of humor in it. And there's a lot of little throwaway lines that you don't really,
Well, and apparently, Here's Looking at You, Kid was something that he actually said to Ingrid Bergman. He just kept saying it in the movie, but it was something he would say just offset.
Yeah.
And they kept it in.
Yeah. Wow. Came to Casablanca for the waters. Casablanca's landlocked. I was misinformed.
Well, and there's a lot of that in It's a Wonderful Life too, where just it flows.
Nice reach back around there.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah,
nice.
Thank you. It's you know how much I paid to go to class to learn what a segue was? See,
isn't
those
that
diplomas
thing you drive
up
around
there?
In?
Yeah. It is. It is. No, it's that classic type of dialogue, and Capra's able to do it without making it seem like a Lifetime movie, because now they roll out all those Christmas at Home, Christmas in Kentucky, whatever. It's always, you know, people fall in love, and it's so over the top and saccharine, but you can actually watch It's a Wonderful Life and not feel like, okay, I get it.
Talking about the robe scene, in the,
and
the old man sitting across the street on the porch. Why don't you just kiss her already? God, youth is wasted on the young. great dialogue.
It was. It was very natural. And I think that's the key to good writing, which surprises me that the writers didn't like it. But, I guess he was upset because only one of his ideas stayed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But if you can write something and make somebody feel something instead of nausea, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I think. And that was something he had in all his films that, you know, they were idealized. Like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of those where you think, man, I wish all politicians were like that.
Yeah.
Completely removed from reality.
Right.
But
right.
you end up liking him and thinking, you know, hey, that would be really nice.
Yeah.
And you don't just roll your eyes and go, okay. Yeah.
And once again, it's the magnetism of Jimmy Stewart, because mm-hmm. that filibuster could be a boring part of the movie. I mean, that could be like, really? Yeah. I'm going to listen to this guy filibuster?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But he plays it so well, and he's such a likable guy. That's where, you know, we've talked about the persona of the person mm-hmm. or the star versus the character role.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are, he's just playing Jimmy Stewart. Well, I think that's important. I think that plays into the character. If you didn't have that Jimmy Stewart element of the character,
sure.
then you really wouldn't care about the character.
Well, yeah. and like you said, they rewrote it for him, for his sensibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they bring something to the part. I don't think of him ever as like, well, it's Jimmy Stewart being Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm. I think he had range. There were certain aspects to Jimmy Stewart that you wanted in that character, so that's mm-hmm. why you chose him for the role.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just, okay, he's just being himself, kind of like you would,
right.
you know, Tom Cruise is like, okay, it's Tom Cruise being Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
So
right.
let me
Nicholson
ask you guys this.
Nicholson.
Yeah. What do you guys think about the comparisons of Tom Hanks being a modern Jimmy Stewart?
It's close. Probably as close as we get. I remember when Field of Dreams came out, they said Costner was going to be the next one, and I didn't get that. Mm. I didn't get it at all. I mean, that was definitely a Jimmy Stewart kind of part.
Sure.
But I didn't get it. And I never heard that comparison for a long time until Tom Hanks. And I was like, yeah, and I can definitely see Tom Hanks more so than anyone else.
It's just the way he brings his personality to the roles. It mm-hmm. is a Tom Hanks role for the most
kind
part.
Kind of the yeah. everyman, the mm-hmm. nice guy.
Yeah. yeah. If you're going to remake It's a Wonderful Life, it'd probably have to be Tom Hanks. 10-15 years
well,
ago.
Well, you know, you had know? Him doing You've Got Mail,
yeah,
which was
yeah.
Shop on the Corner.
Yeah.
You know, even his role in Saving Private Ryan,
yeah,
kind of that introspective, thoughtful guy,
mm-hmm.
More quiet, not quick to act
mm-hmm.
necessarily.
It would have been a little different, but I think Jimmy Stewart could have played Forrest Gump.
Okay, I got to think about that one.
Now, he wouldn't have used the voice, probably. You know, the...
Right.
But... I could see him telling the flashback stories and
okay.
the compassion. I could see him playing that part.
It's kind of, it's hard for me to wrap my brain around just because the age and putting him in.
True,
that.
But I'm
yeah.
just saying, you know, if you flipped their birth dates, you know,
I think he was certainly capable of doing the role.
Yeah,
you know, and I think him he like Cary Grant, you know, started taking himself out of roles
because mm-hmm.
when Cary Grant did Charade. He didn't want to do it, and he turned it down because he said, look, I think he was 59,
mm-hmm.
Audrey Hepburn was 33.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is just creepy.
Yeah. yeah.
And so they said, give us a day.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a day or a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
They went and rewrote the film.
Really?
And all the writer did was he flipped Cary Grant's lines
mm-hmm.
in some scenes with Audrey Hepburn's so that she pursued him.
Gotcha.
And he didn't pursue her.
Okay.
So then Grant was like, okay, I
yeah,
get it.
I
She's
that.
Pursuing an older guy as opposed to, like, I'm the creepy dude
right.
hitting on
yeah.
the young chick. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you mentioned that movie. I haven't seen it in a while, but that's a great movie. Charade.
You know, you can. It also helps when playing 8 Degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Okay.
Because Walter Matthau's in that.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter Matthau did Grumpy Old Men with Kevin Pollak, who was in... A Few Good Men
with
Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
So from that one movie, because Matthau was in it, you can tie him to James Coburn, George Kennedy.
I can get to Bacon quicker than that from Charade.
Go ahead.
Okay, Walter Matthau was in JFK with Kevin Bacon.
Wow, look
at that. I never saw JFK. Wow.
Wow.
No, I never saw JFK. I'm not an Oliver Stone fan.
I just like that movie. I mean, it was well done.
Okay, so... Since we're off topic.
Ebert rated favorite movie of the year, so I had to watch it, and I liked it.
Who killed JFK?
Somebody. Somebody with a gun.
There we go. Nicely done. I vote for the mob. I think it's the quickest distance. It's just, mob gets you elected, then you say, we're going to shut down the mob. Like, that's not how they work. So
yeah.
that's my quick line to it.
Yeah, it could be. There's so many theories.
Yeah, that or Peter Lawford.
Peter Lawford knows.
Do you think you guys will ever do a movie on Cigars and Cinema that involves Peter Lawford? I guess maybe if you do like the Rat Pack or
Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11, that
Did they smoke cigars in Ocean 11?
I don't know that they do. It was all mostly cigarettes. Yeah. Sinatra wasn't really a cigar guy.
Yeah. Although he came out with his own line in the 90s.
It was the 90s. Everybody came out with their own line. Cigar line. Yeah. Which, what do you guys think of this? The craft beer industry now is what the cigar industry was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a beer.
Yep.
So.
Yeah,
it just seems like it's kind of going that direction.
Yeah, it's getting that way with a lot of liquor too. Rums, like tequilas and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of celebrities putting out stuff. Yeah,
I don't.
Oh, yeah, I heard here yesterday I had one. Oh, John Daly, the golfer, now has a vodka.
Oh yeah,
he's got three different vodkas.
And Dan Aykroyd has his. I know that.
Oh yeah, I think that's
Crystal
one of the
Skull
bottles
thing
back there.
Yeah,
one of the
Jimmy Buffett has a Margaritaville tequila.
Of course he does. Sammy Hagar has tequila.
Who makes it? CAO. It's a Margaritaville cigar. It's not flavored.
I smelled that.
Yeah, I think I still have it here. I have a bag of stuff from the show that I set aside. That
hope you didn't have it in a bag with anything else, because they're all going to smell like margaritas.
Yeah, this wasn't stuff I was.
Has anyone had the Ray Lewis yet?
No.
Wow. Wonder who listens to this.
Tell your tagline for the Ray Lewis cigar.
Burn the evidence. Guilty of good taste. It comes in a 12-count jury box.
This cigar is killer.
And it's got a white band that nobody can find. And then the sizes are like the stiletto, the dagger, the shiv. That's how they name it. I'm treading lightly, but I just...
Why would you... Okay, granted, he didn't commit the murder. He did hide the evidence.
We don't know that.
Well, I mean, in theory. But he covered evidence. He's not that likable a guy anyway. I mean, he pissed off. If you weren't a Ravens fan, you couldn't stand the guy. So why make a cigar for him?
Because America loves second chances. I don't know. I go with Michael Strahan. He was on the cover of Aficionado. He's ubiquitous. Everybody loves the guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just, have him do the cigar.
Or even Howie Long or somebody like that, who's still relevant.
Yeah.
He's on TV all the time, something like
that.
Yeah,
that's
the Jimmy
weird.
I don't get him as a spokesperson at all.
See, Michael Strahan, man, I'm good.
I'm not a Strahan fan. He's just
Strahan can't smoke a cigar and fall between his teeth.
Wow. Letterman did, though. Letterman smoked for years. And Lauren Hutton.
Man, if I were...
Yeah, but Letterman just did Lancero. He's just shoved right between the teeth.
Just hold it there.
Yeah.
Well, Strahan, you got enough money. Fix those things, man. Pull them together.
So did they ever actually smoke the cigars in It's a Wonderful Life? Or was it just the
outfit?
Okay. I wasn't sure. It's so interesting. And it was Potter who smoked, wasn't it?
He gave one to Bailey.
But see, it goes back to the bad guy smokes the cigars.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
we talked about that.
Oh, yeah, because when Jimmy turns down the job, the first thing he does is put down the cigar.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Even back then, it was this subtle way of getting
it.
It's
such a great prop. I've read so many actors.
Oh, it is. They love it.
They'll pick a cigar over cigarettes any day of the week as a prop. It's just a much better prop than a cigarette is.
You can do so much with it.
Yeah.
You can point the way you can. It gives you a reason to do hand gestures.
You can talk with it in your mouth. Mm-hmm.
You kind of can.
Well, you try anyway.
It's kind of like going to the dentist. The dentist can figure out what you're saying because they're used to it. It's like guys in cigar shops. They can kind of hear what you're mumbling.
Any better?
Yeah. Yeah. That was my version. That was my version of Daughter.
Pearl Jam.
Well done. I like that.
All right, guys. So we're going to wrap it up here. So, final thoughts?
Great movie.
I like the movie.
Yeah.
I think of it as a much darker film, not necessarily a happy Christmas film, but I think of it as rather dark.
Yeah, it does have a darkness to it.
I kind of like that.
I think the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people get, especially in the 80s when it was overdone, people just thought about the sappy part, which there really isn't, but the ending can come off sappy, but you have to invest the whole rest of the movie to get to that part. And the whole other part of the movie's dark. I mean, he yells at his kids for no reason.
I mean, when he's kissing Donna Reed the first time, he shanks her.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got some demons.
Yeah.
His character. And he's a very put-upon guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he reaches a breaking point.
Yeah, the weight gets to him at points.
So. There's actually versions of the film back in the Turner days when it was just showing all over the place where they cut out him shaking her part. It's just you can see it. It's online. Yeah, you can see where he just kisses her and then there's a fade and he's still kissing her. I'm like, wow, they just cut out the whole part.
And that I think that was crucial to it.
Yeah, I think so too.
It said a lot about his character.
It did.
So. enjoy seeing it. That'll be cool seeing it on
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Yep.
It's going to be fun.
All right, guys. So we're going to close it out. Where can you find us, Randy?
iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Stitcher, Podcastland, Podomatic, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. I'm at RandyRankin43 on Twitter.
At Captain Funky Pants at Freudian slip. Captain Funky Pants on Twitter. And we also have the Cigars and Cinema on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm Randy Rankin 95 on Instagram.
And Cigar underscore Luna on Instagram. Where can they find your show, This May Hurt?
That we are at This Show Hurts on Twitter. We have our Facebook page, This May Hurt. And eventually, Joe and I will do a new episode. It's been probably 3 weeks now. We can't get our schedules to work.
Yeah, it happens that way. We've had about, about that long, too.
We're still doing it. We plan for a show every week. Mm. I know it sounds like it's all ad-libbed, but there's actually parts that, you know, it's like, okay, we want to talk about this and that. And we have it written up, and then we just can't get our schedules to work. So hopefully people keep checking back to see if we're there, because we're still doing it and still enjoy doing it. So.
And do listen to it. It's great. And I'm not just saying it because you're here. You guys got great chemistry. It's very entertaining to listen to. I'm not a podcast guy, ironically enough. But your show's great. I really enjoy it.
Thanks, man.
I do, too.
And thanks for letting me sit in with you guys. I appreciate it.
Always fun having you on, man.